outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gen.
So Wayne, I got to embark on one of the rites of passage in parenthood this weekend.
Okay. You have an interesting way of introducing these things. Embarking on a rite of passage. Are you done potty training?
No. Okay. No. My daughter, Eliana, was... So we were at a couples event this weekend. So there was six families and we're playing games and having dinner. And it was a great time. Well, Eliana and Evie went over to a friend's house and we were sharing a babysitter. And about halfway through the evening, I get a phone call from the babysitter saying, "Hey, so Eliana fell off of a large inflatable slide and she landed on her arm and it's pretty bad. You need to come now." So thankfully, my best friend Marcos, he was here and he's a medic. And so he jumped in the car with me and we went over to the babysitter's and... Sure enough, Eliana had shattered both bones in her left arm. So she is now in a cast and we got to go through that whole thing. She did great. She was a rock star. I was very, very proud of her on how she handled it. We are not sure whether or not she's going to have surgery.
Oh, boy.
It was a bad enough break where it could have very easily become a compound fracture and they had to do a little bit more work to try to reset the bone or bones, I guess. So we're going back in on Friday to find out whether or not we have to go in for surgery and do plates and all that kind of fun stuff. We're hoping not. She's in a temporary cast right now, and she seems to be doing really well. In fact, she went to summer school today. She was really excited to go and see her classmate and get to know her new teacher and kind of prepare for the up and coming semester. And so we'll see. But Great. It's definitely one of those rites of passage.
I guess so. We never had broken arm with our kids.
Really? No broken bones at all?
Well, my daughter tripped over a dog at about age four, three, and broke her collarbone.
Yeah.
So we had one. I've never had a broken bone, so except for my back when I had to do surgery, but I fortunately avoided that kind of pain. So,
at least for the Rice family, it is definitely a rite of passage. I was laughing and... My brother Nathan was way more accident prone than I was, but even myself came in. I was counting them up, and I have over 14 broken bones that were significant enough to write home about. So, yeah,
jeez. Some people can't be trusted.
I know, you know, that's what happens when you grow up on a ranch versus a vineyard.
Well, I got my new corrective lenses yesterday. So
there's no two. There's no two of me.
Well, I would like to say there's no two. I was expecting, and I still remember the day, I think I was 12 or 13, I put on glasses for the first time, and the whole world was like crystal clear. And there were leaves on trees, which I had forgotten that trees had leaves because you couldn't see them. They were just a big green mess. And I was expecting that. I go in and get my new glasses and the prism thing. I'm thinking, okay, man, everything's going to come back crystal clear. Not at all. I put them on, looked across the room and going, okay, I'm still seeing double. Not Ooh. As significant as before I put them on, but still. Yeah. And she said, oh, yeah, it's going to take your eyes like 5 or 6 days to adjust to the prism feature and your mind wrapping. I had no idea. I thought I was going to put them on and the whole world would be... Better again.
Wow.
Yeah, I guess it takes a while to learn how to use these things. So my brain's adjusting to all that, sadly enough.
I'm fighting having to wear glasses because I have started to have the experience that you were talking about.
Come on in, Kyle. The water's great. I won't hurt you.
The problem is I am seeing the benefits of wearing my glasses more and more and more, and that makes me a little nervous.
Isn't that like anything else? You'll stick with the status quo until it becomes uncomfortable enough that the discomfort of change is less a hassle. So,
yes.
And until then, that's when you get hips replaced and wear eyeglasses for the first time and do that and stuff. For me, it was really easy. I could not see. I was having a headache every night. It was crazy when this double vision thing came on me. So, I'm glad it's nothing more major than my eyes just took a little slip of some kind. We also had a good class this weekend with
nice.
How Does Love Make This Right? And a whole way of thinking now and taking the justice material and really turning it into how does love make right in the world?
Yeah.
And how does it make me right on the inside first? Because that's where it's got to start. Love can, even if I'm being lied about, betrayed, whatever, love can make things right on the inside. And then it gave me a different way to respond. So we actually started from the back of the book. Our first class was about finding our fullness.
Ooh, okay.
Because finding fullness is the way we live. Injustice gets sorted out in us and the way we get to live with justice in the world, because we're not looking for other people and circumstances and things to fill us up. We're finding our fullness in Him. So it was a fun class. We had about 32 people in on it with us, and yeah, it was a good first start. I'm really excited now to hit number two this week and already getting people signing up for the next one, which we haven't announced yet, but we will at some point.
Okay. You're going to be copywriting a whole curriculum on this, and you're going to be starting master classes and VIP extra access, that type of thing.
We're going to turn it into a product. Is that what you're saying? I think we're going to avoid that. I think we're having fun helping people live the practicality of it out of love and not out of performance stuff. Really excited about where that may go. Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to this episode of The God Journey. Best thing you heard this week, Kyle?
I've been doing a little bit of research and just thinking through abiding. And I actually took a page out of Wayne Jacobson Textbook of Life. And
where'd you get that? Where did you get that? The trail guide give that to you?
No, this might be copyright infringement. No, I went and asked AI some questions about abiding and especially what perspectives and some different vantage points on what it means to live and to abide. And this is one of the things that came out of that I really appreciated. The feedback was the deepest heart movement in this journey is moving from separation to union.
Wow. And that's nothing to me more expresses the task in God's hand than to find these disaffected, alienated, somewhat angry, vengeful, the children of wrath that we talked about, which wasn't God's wrath, but their own.
Yeah.
And integrating them into that communion, into that union. Man, it is a huge task on God's side. And it's a bit of a task on ours to learn not to try to make that happen, but to learn how we cooperate with His doing instead of trying to make it ours.
And recognizing, I had a really cool conversation with a gentleman just a couple days ago, one of those spontaneous God conversations that we ended up talking for almost 2 hours, and great, great conversation. But he made the comment, "I've never heard God say anything to me." And my immediate feedback or pushback was that you're aware of, because, man, I just feel like God is laying these foundations, these relational foundations, to be able to connect with people, to do unity and conversation and intimacy together. And yet there is so much work that He has to do to lay those foundations of trust and those invitations that He strategically plans and places in our life to be able to move towards Him relationally. And it's a pretty wild process, I feel like.
Well, it is. It's a beautiful process.
Particularly
when we get over that hump of initially it's very disorienting. It doesn't feel like it's working. I can't see it. I don't know what's going on. And if we just keep finding our way into that reality and God's Spirit keeps rearranging stuff from the inside so that we can begin to see and begin to understand and then begin to walk in this relationship that is so intimate and transforming and beautiful. It's just amazing.
What about you?
Well, before I get to mine, let me just, I tagged us onto the last podcast, but we are having some needs in Kenya right now, and we're trying to raise some money there. And we're still short some. So if any of you want to participate with us in what's going on in Kenya right now, it's both kind of helping rescue some need, and it's also an opportunity to put copies of Just Love into the school system of Kenya.
Ooh. Okay.
Unfortunately, we're the ones that have to print them. So we're trying to help them find the money to print those books. If you'd like to help us, there'll be a link at the bottom of this podcast. Now, the best thing I heard this week, it's not a thing like a quote. It's a story. Okay. It's a story I'm watching unfold in someone that's very dear to me. It's my friend Lewis. If you've heard the podcast, you know what Lewis has been through. You know the trauma in his life from a very young age. And if you haven't heard the podcast, you might go back. Because we're just right now, there's a really interesting time in what God's doing with Lewis, because we've got somebody who's willing to lease him some space for 3 years. And so we're trying to arrange everything that needs to be arranged to get him and the boys into this space, which will be more than just a gym for boxing. It's also going to be a place to help him train people for the life of Jesus. We're real excited about that. But Lewis and I get together regularly. And over the last 5 years, maybe since we finished that podcast, and my friends always battle night terrors. With his growing up, with what happened to him in the, particularly the night his dad died, but more than that, the abuse of his family, the trauma from his dad's dying and being attacked by coyotes trying to get his father's body, and the horror of that night, and then coming back to town and being accused of betraying his father, abandoning his father in the mountains. The things that have piled on him. The Lewis I've always known lives with a sense of threat and bravado because he's on guard even when there's no reason to be on guard. And I've watched these night terrors and dreams he's been having. I've shared some on the podcast at times, but these dreams of these wild beasts attacking, and he's got guns and he's trying to kill them, and he can't kill them, and they overwhelm him. And just as they're ready to kill him, he wakes up. And I mean, he probably has this dream 3 or 4 nights a week. It's terrifying. It compromises his sleep, obviously. But over the last 2-3 years, that dream has been changing. First of all, he's on the battlefield and he's got weapons and he's going for them. Jesus shows up and says, lay your weapons down. The only weapon you need is love. And I remember the first time Lewis shared that with me, like, what do you mean love is a weapon? And he couldn't wrap his head around it at all.
Yeah.
And yet I knew God was doing something significant in his dreams. And what I've watched over the last 5 years that really culminated on Saturday morning is that this journey has been about God using Lewis's dreams to build new neural pathways in his brain. Because I'm watching Sarah do it in a very different process.
Yep.
And now I'm hearing Lewis describe where this dream has gone. This dream has gone from being in the battlefield and losing all the time to finally trying to realize he's defending Jesus. And Jesus says, I don't need you to defend me, Lewis. I will defend you. And he's trying to guard Jesus at one point who happens to be on the cross in this dream. Mm-hmm. And Jesus says, stop, Lewis. I don't need you. He said, no, I'm defending you. And Jesus says, and yet you've turned your back to me. And that was, I remember that being just a clink. Wow, what a point of wisdom that is. Yeah. And so he turns to face Jesus, and at that point, all his enemies pass away. Well, this has gone on where he's learning more and more to lay down his weapons. One time, these are not people necessarily. Mostly they're wild beasts. They're real demonic creatures that are attacking him. Once in the middle of a battle, he looks over and Jesus is under a tree with a table sat, and he's inviting Lewis to come over to have lunch. And Lewis is like, I can't have lunch. Man, there's people dying out here. I'm trying to kill everybody. And Jesus says, come over here. And he remembers the Psalm 23 scripture, setting a table before me in the presence of my enemies. So he sits down, has lunch with Jesus. And they talk about some of this. Well, here's where the dream has gone lately that I think is just as outstanding. It really is culminating in a beautiful thing. He's on the battlefield and he gets there, and it's right before the battle starts to happen. Mm-hmm. And he realizes he doesn't have a gun. And he tries to get a gun, and nobody gives him a gun. And he said, well, I don't have a gun. I need a gun. And I said, well, because you're the medic. I don't want to be the medic. I want to have a gun. And the guy who's leading the group, the company, into battle, and I'm writing a blog on this because Lewis asked me, that he said I could share this because that is a great story. And he goes to even pick up a gun on the ground. And he can't pick it up. It's like it's cemented to the ground. He can't pick it up. And the guy who's leading the company is a bit of an idiot. Listen, this guy is going to get us all killed in battle. And so he's telling him, he says, you need to not be in charge of this company. Make me in charge. I'll be in charge. And the guy looks at him and says, no, I can't. These are my orders. My orders are to be in charge. Your orders are to be the medic. He's, I don't want to be the medic. And he's really upset because he knows this guy's going to get them all killed. So he yells, who came up with this idea? Whose idea is this? And he hears behind him, it's mine. And he turns around and it's Jesus standing there. This is how I want it. He goes, I don't want to be a medic. I want it. And then the battle starts, and Jesus says, when people are falling all around him, he says, go heal my brothers. And so Lewis starts going among, and it was not brothers, just those on his side. It was everybody. So he goes to start laying hands on people. And he did this probably a year ago. He had a dream where these wild creatures were at him and they were dying at his feet. And then Jesus told him to touch them. And as he touched these wild beasts, they came back to life, but they came back to life as little puppies. And they were trying to climb on him with affection and love. And it was so strange to him that these enemies were being converted into little innocent puppies. So as we talk about this dream now, he's going into battle. He starts touching people, and the wounded get healed, and the dead get resurrected. And when they get resurrected, they're like puppies. He said, they're like coming to him, and just thank you so much. And Lewis said, that's not me. It's him. Mm-hmm. And they look over and see Jesus, and then they start rejoicing that Jesus healed them. Well, then he's trying to get to stop the battle. He's trying to get the soldiers to see Jesus. But he said, they can't see Jesus. And he looked at me and he told me, he says, you know what I'm beginning to learn is they can't see Jesus until they're wounded, which I'm okay. Mm. That is very interesting. But if they are wounded, now they have the chance to be healed, and now they have the chance to see. And I thought of Jesus said, I didn't come for the well. I came for the sick. I came for those. Because somehow when we're broken, when we're hurt, when we're whatever, we're more open to see a reality that we miss when we live in our own strength and trying to protect ourselves and doing all that. And so as I've watched this happen, I looked at Lewis and I said, you know what's going on here? And he said, well, I said, God's turning you from a warrior into a healer. And he's doing it at a very deep level. It's not a conscious choice thing. He's changing your neural pathways that always think threat and response and destroy the enemy. And that's how we always think. We joke about it all the time because it's like destroy. Yeah. And he said, but I don't want to be defenseless. And I said, you won't be defenseless. I think what love does is it doesn't destroy the enemy. It disarms the enemy. And so we've talked about how his whole thinking is shifting inside these dreams. Nothing's going on when he's awake to kind of lend itself to this, but I see his nature softening. In fact, he said Saturday when we sat here, he said, you know, there's a part of me, and when it gets threatened, when it gets pushed, it rises up, my jaw drops. He could describe all the physical changes. And I said, so like the Hulk, he goes, the Hulk, that's exactly what it's like. But he said, I don't want him anymore. I'm telling him to go sit down over there and don't come back to me because I don't want my wife to see it. I don't want my daughters to see it. And so we talked through that whole idea of how do we lay that aside? How does God want him? And then if we had enemies approaching, would you invite him back? Or would you say, how would love disarm the threat? Instead of how do I physically destroy the threat? And which is exactly what Lewis does with these kids who have grown up in very difficult circumstances.
Yeah.
Well, today he comes over here and he tells me the dream he had this morning, which was he was right before the battle. Same thing. He's the medic. All this stuff's going on. And it takes him a long. He doesn't go into the dream remembering he had this dream before. When he's in the dream, it's like it's happening for the first time. He's making all the same mistakes. But this time he was like, he was a drone that flew over the enemy's camp. And as he got near the enemy to watch them prepare for battle, he could hear their thoughts. And all their thoughts were, even their leaders, I'm terrified. I don't want to do this. I'm going to get hurt. I'm going to get killed. I don't want to. But on the outside, because they're whipping the men up into some kind of frenzy or these wild beasts into some frenzy of warfare, they're all on the outside. Yeah, bluster, bravado, all that. But in the inside, they're terrified. Then he comes back to his camp and they're all terrified too, but they're not acting like it because they've got to be strong. And then Jesus is staying there and says, when he refers to the enemy, so do you really want to kill them? Do you want to destroy them? They're the same as the people you're standing with. They're afraid and they're acting out of fear. And that fear can be so destructive. Okay. Anyway, I see how God, over 5 years of dreams and the progression of those dreams, he doesn't always catch the progression. But when he shares it with me, I'm going, because this moment of seeing tenderly these creatures, Remember the moment when he had that night with his dad and there was that coyote that finally was wounded near him and he was going to torture that thing for all it put him through? And he caught the eye of that coyote just with fear. And then he couldn't torture it anymore. He just couldn't. And now to see that unfolding with these wild beasts in his dream, the through thread of how God is drawing Lewis into not just because he has the heart of a healer already, but to rewire the inside so the threat level is gone and that he sees his role in the world as a healer. When he left on Saturday morning, I was just so in awe of how God would take dreams like this to do a work in Lewis. He does this in other ways with people. I've never seen this before, but I think it's so beautiful.
But it makes sense for Lewis because God's talked to Lewis in his dreams for as long as, over the entirety of his lifetime. So why not use his dreams as a way for him to draw him into a deeper sense of healing? I love that.
It's such a practical work going on in his psychological makeup. The renewing of the mind, the rewiring of his mind is going on through Jesus' participation in these dreams. And I think it's extraordinary.
I mean, the comment, do you really want to kill them? Especially having gone for as many years as he has gone with this as a night terror that he's being tormented by, and now all of a sudden the vantage point is being shifted, and now all of a sudden there's this space of seeing them from a completely different perspective, that they would be scared too, that they don't want to do this, but they're having to pump themselves up to go and do this. And that really challenges my perspective of the enemy as well, because even though we talk about the enemy, they still are originally God's creation. And so my thought is like, Lord, how do you see them all? How do you see the whole vantage point? And man, to be able to go through and to work this out and be able to see this over years and years and years, but at the subconscious level, like most of us, we aren't aware of what's going on in our subconscious.
Right.
We aren't aware of what's going on. We see the byproduct of it. We see the defense mechanisms, we see the maladaptive behavior, we see the broken relationships, but we do not see the actual turbulence that's happening at that subconscious level. That is where those real deep threat meters and self-protection and self-preservation, that's where all that lives.
Yep.
And so to be able to be there to see that, and the thought that came through my mind as you were talking about that, is that it's hard to heal when you are under threat.
Yes.
So if your head's constantly on a swivel, it's very, very hard to be a healer. And my grandfather was the first army unit to receive weapons as a medic. Because before then, medics weren't issued a firearm.
Right.
If they got into it and it was an absolute mess and they had to defend their life, then they can grab something from a downed soldier or somebody who's wounded, but they were never issued a firearm. And man, to go from warrior, which I still think there is still some warrior in him as well, though I think God's going to want to rebrand that and give that a different perspective too. But to shift that to medic, if you're a warrior, if you're a fighter, you can fight out of fear. You can be a warrior and fight for things and against things out of fear, out of that fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. You can't heal. Like I just listed the four different responses to threat, and heal is not in them. That is a prefrontal cortex advanced ability skill set.
And to even see when Jesus begins with lay down your weapons, you don't need your weapons anymore. And then to realize that I had no idea 5 years ago where that was going to go.
Yeah.
To actually now where he sees the weapon itself is in the way of healing. That the warrior spirit that, you know, is just rises up. And we talked about being children of wrath, the aggressive, violent behavior that's often
the Hulk
inculcated in the man, in the male of the species, is so counterproductive. I would bet if you could get some soldiers from Iran to sit down with American soldiers, they would find they're not that different. They're the political machinery under which they operate makes them enemies.
Yes.
And makes them wish to destroy. And what you've got to do to get somebody in a frame of mind where they will destroy on command, and then to watch this change in Lewis's heart, that this, he's already doing it for young kids. The gang kids he's working with, he is that among them. He showed me a text today where some guy who's now in college grew up with that said, Lewis, you're the only father I ever had. It wasn't his father. Just, and Lewis doesn't position himself as a father. He just, he's just an older brother trying to help kids who've come from very, very broken backgrounds find a way to live in love. And now for that to change so deeply within him, to where he's wanting to put aside this violent part of his nature that's always defended him, always protected him. It's been an important part of his life. It was part of his survival for sure.
Yep.
And for Jesus to unravel that and give him the heart of someone who can see even my enemy is a fearful person needing healing. I think about it in my own life. If I think of people I think who've done me wrong or, you know, whatever, to see them not as aggressively evil people, but folks that were afraid and reacted out of their fear in the only way they knew how, to be part of God, not destroying that, but disarming it. And that makes Ephesians 6 make so much sense when it says, we don't fight against flesh and blood. If you think your battle is with another human being, you're missing the point as a follower of Christ in this world, for sure.
So how does this message, this awakening, this revelation, how does that impact his modality of connecting with these young guys? Because the modality is boxing. And so I'm intrigued to find out, or curious to find out, has that changed? Has that started to shift in him? Does he still see boxing as a primary on-road to connect with these young guys?
It is the doorway in. It's mostly taught as self-defense. It's not taught as being aggressive. It's taught more as a sport of competition. So it isn't violent in that sense. I think all boxing is violent. So that Lewis and I are friends while he does this is just astounding to me. And that I'm helping him, you know, get a gym and find ways to do this. But it is such an inroad into these young people's hearts. Now, there's women coming too. So it's not just boys, it's also girls.
Yeah.
And they're finding ways to be with, and most of them come and they'll say that, I don't come for the boxing, I come to be with you. This is the safest place I feel all week long. Can you imagine a 13-year-old saying the only place I feel safe is when I go to this class two or three nights
and get punched?
But in their mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to watch, I mean, Lewis couldn't sit in my home without my door being locked, my front door. I don't always lock my front door, but Lewis comes in, he locks the door and sits down. And I'm never comfortable behind an unlocked door. I'm going, oh my gosh, to live with that kind of threat. And so how much of this moves, I don't know, because Lewis is, we're still in the middle of this journey.
Yeah.
But as we were sitting there Saturday morning, we're putting the pieces together. And it was just, do you realize what Jesus has been doing? This is a strategic progression of experiences, albeit in your dreams, and conversations with Jesus that is disarming the monster in you. And I think it's extraordinary. The unlimited ways God has, because I look at the same process going on in Sarah, who's very different. She's not a fighter. Lewis is a complete fighter. You threaten him, he's all over you. And in fact, he gets mostly invited to family functions with his brothers, because if somebody starts picking on him, they want Lewis to be there to defend them. Yeah. So they still use this guy that they abused. Now they want him to intercede when somebody's causing problems at a family gathering. I tell you what, I have so treasured my friendship with Lewis. I've so treasured what has gone on, what is going on in his life, and how God has done that in him through Raphael as a young man, through Captain Herrera, through our friendship. Oh my goodness. It's It's an amazing story of redemption, for sure. And learning to watch that rewiring of the mind, that, as Paul talked about it, you know, that our minds would see what Christ sees. They would be restructured so that they think in spiritual reality and not in the reactions of our emotions and our experiences from the past. Oh my goodness, how can you not celebrate that? That's just so incredible.
It is. My heart goes out to him, especially with the family space, because I think, again, that's where it's so difficult as God is moving us into a healing place, a healed place where we're able to live more out of that wholehearted, not fear-based identity that God has placed in us.
Yeah.
The more that we live out of that space, family is the hardest place to do that, where they've got years, if not decades, of perspective on this is who you are. And I put air quotes around that for people who are not watching the video. This is who you are, and this is how you're going to behave. And even thinking about Jesus's space when he goes back to his family and what his interactions with his community and his people group look like. And man, that can be so challenging. I think back to some of the very intense times of healing that God was doing in my world as he was really untangling some of those deep spaces. And the most challenging space was with family, because they knew me as counselor. They knew me as protector. They knew me as valiant warrior. That's how they knew me. But as God began to untangle that and say, no, I'm going to give you a new stone with a new name on it.
Mm-hmm.
As he was doing that, that was the hardest space to be able to really live that out, because it's so easy to get sucked back in. Those old identities, especially when they're wired that early on, out of that level of necessity and ingrained at that level of trauma, it's so hard to rewire those things and to untangle that and to move you into a different space where the neural pathways and the responses are not born out of that trauma, but they're born out of the corrective experiences of love.
And I think what also complicates family is the dynamics of relationship, even without the trauma that's there, the dynamics of relationship in a family, things that, you know, mistakes made as kids and woundedness that you carry and offensiveness. And then as you get older, people really begin to manipulate their family to get to fullness.
Yeah.
And so it's all about how you act and how you treat. And if you move outside the narrow boundaries that we used to relate in, it makes everybody very uncomfortable. And they resort then to judgments about you that no longer hold sway except in their memory and in their mind. And you've transited to something more real and more different. And that's why I think the family is the most complicated place to try to be a new creation in Christ Jesus, because they often don't want you to be.
No,
I saw that with my mom and some of the things of how she would manipulate a family and just saying, okay, I'm done with that.
Yeah.
And as I got done with it, then I became a bit of a pariah, because that's how our family works. You manipulate this way and you get manipulated this way. And when you stop doing both of those things, and Sarah and I are reading Matthew, and two passages this week that we read was both about that. They're saying, hey, your mother and your brothers are outside. And Jesus said, look, my mother and my brothers are those that do the will of the kingdom. Mm. It's not, it would be nice if that were part of our family life as well, that we shared the same communion and unity in Christ that I share with other people. But honestly, as my family progressed over time, I am much closer, much more intimately involved with other people in my life. Even with what happened to my dad toward the end, there are other older brothers than my dad's age that I've had on this journey who I resonated more with in the end because of the common union we had in Christ. Then my dad was, particularly as he got older, went on more of a religious path, and it was tough to connect at the level we used to connect at. And that's threatening to people. That just makes them turn on you.
Yes.
And Jesus was very aware, saying, look, the kingdom of God creates its own family and its own reality. Mm. And it would be nice if those two completely overlapped, but they often don't. Yeah. And then how do you just stay loving in your family, even if you don't get a lot of respect there or affirmation for what God's doing in your life?
Well, because the challenge is that when you go back to your family system of origin and you live out of this new space, whether it's I'm not going to do those old patterns or this is who God's created me to be or whatever that looks like, it is so incredibly disruptive to the family system.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do with it. And because it's a, I feel like a divine invitation for all parties involved to move towards healing. But in general, the consensus tends to be that's too much work. If all of us started doing that amount of work and all of us started moving towards that level of healing and all of us started challenging these patterns, I don't know where it's going to go. I don't know what the relationships are going to look like on the other side of it. I don't know if we'll even still like each other on the other side of it. That work is really, really hard. I don't know. I think I want to maintain the status quo. And so living out of that fullness is so incredibly disruptive and challenging to those old systems.
It is. Anytime somebody moves toward change, I hear this with women who've been captivated by Sarah's story and they want to move toward healing from some of the trauma that's affected their subservient relationship to their spouse. Yeah. And their spouse is just not willing to let them go down. That's not what I married. That's not who you were. And it breaks my heart. I think with families, the same thing. We're used to the way things are. And with brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles, this is what we do. This is our family. And when you, particularly the dysfunctional elements of it, when you no longer serve the dysfunctional element, it's weird that you become a threat. It seems weird because wouldn't we all want to embrace this freedom? It doesn't always have to be a lot of work. It can be, certainly, going deep to sort out who you are and find that reality. But other times it's just, it's change. And the old ways I manipulated you don't work anymore. And now I get to accuse you of being insensitive, rebellious, uncaring, because you don't cooperate with the dysfunctional system you grew up in. And it's always a threat. And it's sad that that happens in families, particularly in religious families, when you've moved out to not necessarily break the religious protocol that the family went through, or you stop going to a Sunday meeting that the family, that this is where we're a family. We do this on Sunday morning and then we go to dinner, have dinner afterwards. And you just don't fit in the same way. Rather than people celebrating growth,
yes,
they often despise it. Not for the person. They despise it for what it will risk in them to have to change and maybe learn new protocols and stop manipulating in some way. And it's sad to me that growth isn't celebrated as much as it could be. I watch my friend grow. I watch him change from the inside. And I think it's beautiful. I watch Sarah change. It's changed everything about the way Sarah and I relate to each other.
Yeah.
But the fruit of that is beautiful. The fruit of that is not, okay, well, Wayne really taking it on the chin now because Sarah's getting whole. No, Sarah getting whole is the best thing that could happen for me. It's the best. But we often don't see it that way. And that makes me sad because change is threatening. And some of the change in Lewis is threatening to his family. And it's, I watch that happen. I go, yeah, that's the fruit of it too. It's sad that we want people to stay in line. The whole idea of your place, that's your place, that's still your place. You don't have the right to change that place.
Yep, don't leave your lane. That's your lane, this is your lane.
This is your lane in this family. And boy, when you do it because you don't care about us. That's how it's interpreted.
Yes.
And so they can be very wounded and very justified in their woundedness, but the message is still the same. Shut up and go along. Or you're outside our framework now. And that's happened. I mean, that happens often. That's why Jesus talked about, I don't think I came, you know, to establish peace, but also a sword. And, fathers to children and children, brothers and sisters to each other. And I've watched a lot of that happen with people who go on a journey when the other people in the family system cannot suffer the change. And then they miss the celebration. My gosh, I wish everyone on this podcast could have sat with me the last 5 years when I've been with Lewis and watched this process happen. because it gives such hope for how might God want to transform me. If the idea coming away, I wish I had dreams like Lewis, that's not going to serve you well.
Correct.
If it's my goodness, God has infinite ways to bring us toward healing. How is he doing that in me? And ask that question and explore that with him. Then see what you discover and what kind of light and freedom it brings to your experience.
I think this is the question that I get a lot, especially either from the family members or from the spouse, is the feedback of, how is this authored by love? How could this stuff that's happened in this person, how could that be authored by love? Because it is causing so much pain. It's causing so much disruption. It's ruining relationships. It's destroying our family. How could that be authored by love?
It depends on what they're doing. If they're finding greater healing, that's one. If they come to family gatherings cussing people out and screaming and doing stuff, then you could say, yes, how is this love?
Yes, absolutely.
But if someone's getting more whole and that disrupts your comfort zone, this is where we've got to be cheerleaders for each other. My goodness, I want to cheerlead Sarah's journey. Yes, her journey challenges stuff to change in me. Great, bring it on. I've always become a better person responding to what's happening in Sarah, always. I can't think of one thing that I've had to adjust in my heart to make room for Sarah's wholeness that diminished me as a person. None of it. But you've
got
to
get there, though. Like, how did you get to that space where you were okay with that? Because so many people would move towards defensiveness, self-protection, get back in line. Having a parent tell a child, you better not tell people that my prospective spouse is abusing you because I don't want my soon-to-be marriage to be ruined. It's like, how?
Oh, you have to love the person more than you love your comfort. I love Sarah. I want Sarah in my life. I'd rather, as the refrain of the song goes, I'd rather live in her world than without her in mine. So I'm open to always to see how God is reconstructing her life and how it is that because God's at work in her and in me, when we both learn to love more deeply, we both benefit from that, even if there's change involved. We so worship comfort and so fear discomfort that I think we miss most of the opportunities for healing that God wants to bring us.
And I think that's the problem, is so often we are willing to sacrifice the heart journey, the love, the healing of another person to maintain our sense of comfort. And I would say our sense of control. Right? Because as soon as we allow our life enough access to somebody else's world to where their movement and what God is doing in their life is now asking us to move outside of our comfort zone and to start figuring out, how do I hold space for this new person? How do I remain curious and explore and continue to cheerlead this new person that is growing and thriving in front of me? And yet often that really pokes our sense of self-comfort and self-control in the eye.
Because that's the cost of community. And if you're not willing to embrace that, then you don't get to whine on the other side of, I don't know what community means. Well, I just found out we're going on hiatus once again this summer. Kyle's not available the rest of this week or next to do some recording since his school year is starting up and all the demands for that. So we'll take a week off and look for us again toward the end of August.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.